Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Deliberate Life Podcast. On this week, we actually had another awesome interview with Dan John. So if you guys don't know who Dan is one of the most preeminent people in the field of strength and conditioning. And the reason we had him on the show is he shares our idea and our message that, you know, to succeed in life and to get anywhere and to reach your goals, it's not a bunch of complex things. It's doing the simple, easy things we all know that we need to do and doing them consistently. You know, we had a really great conversation with Dan, and we couldn't be more excited to share it with you. And we're going to lead you into the show with a little motivation because it's exactly what we talked about on this show. So anyway, we hope you enjoy the show, and we can't wait to hear from you all.
I hope they got yourself.
The only thing that I see that is distinctly different about me is I'm not afraid to die on a treadmill, right? I will run.
You would not be outworked.
I will not be outworked,
right?
Period.
Yeah.
You know, you might have more talent than me. You might be smarter than me. You might be sexier than me. You might be all of those things. You got it on me in 9 categories. But if we get on the treadmill together, right? There's 2 things. You're getting off first,
yeah,
or I'm gonna die. It's really that simple.
Wasted 10,000.
Dan, so I kind of got exposed to your writing a couple years ago, and you know, I really kind of relate to your style of not only writing, but you know, as a strength coach, kind of that. Just your style of the way that you do things and you like to do things. Could you just, you know, describe maybe a little bit what that is for our audience to listen to?
My style of training?
Sure. I guess, just your style of coaching.
Your philosophy, so to speak.
Sure. Well, I mean, it's all foundational stuff. I mean, it's the kind of the mission statement of what we do is, you know, we focus on the fundamental human movements with appropriate reps and sets and appropriate load. And it's funny to say something like that because people go, well, so what did you mean by that? It's like, well, I just gave you a 50-year career right there. But, you know, it's I would say what I like to do is an absolute focus on the foundation, on that first level of things, and worry about, you know, if you're doing your loaded carries, your basic squat, your basic hinges, your push, your pull, you eat protein, you eat your vegetables, you drink water, and you sleep every night, you're doing okay. You know,
yeah,
you're going to be able to build a career doing that as an athlete. You're going to be able to live a long, happy life with pretty good joints, and you know, you'll look pretty good, you know. And yet, there's nothing sexy about it, and that's a problem I have. Is like, I just told you, I just gave you the keys to the kingdom. I just gave you the code to the lock, you know. And it's the hard part is, like my friend Rick Bojack says, you know, you can't get bored watching the basics. You know, usually it's the coach's problem. It's not the athlete's, you know. So really, that's in a nutshell what I do. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. You know, Pete and I spend so much of our time talking about, you know, all these really basic foundational, but at the end of the day, the most effective concepts. But unfortunately, it just seems like everybody thinks the complicated, snazzy, sexy things work, you know, but clearly when we look at, you know, what's actually effective, that's not the case. So how have you, what are some of the things that you found to get people to understand, you know, the basics are what works, and how do you get people, you know, some of your athletes and people that you found to be so successful to buy into the basics?
Well, no, I mean, that's the tough part.
Mm-hmm.
It, okay, so let's just go through it. I mean, the easiest way is pain. I don't mind an athlete who's just, in my own case, throwing the discus out of bounds on their best throw of their life and missed something. That was actually a good thing in hindsight that that happened to me, because I just, the pain of failure propelled me to give up all kinds of things and make all these bizarre commitments that nobody else would be able to make. The woman who's just got divorced, her husband left her for somebody else. I mean, she's a great fat loss client. She'll do anything you want because the pain motivates her. The problem is that that represents a very, very small percent of the population.
Mm-hmm.
We know that if I could stick your fat loss clients on in either a prison where I got preying a monkey chow three times a day or two times a day, and we were able to make them exercise with, you know, shock treatment or something. So if you can't use pain and you can't use prison, the only other way is what I call pound the pavement. The motivational guys like Josh and Steve-O and some of the others would say it's habits. But really, it's this idea that, you know, what we say in discus throwing, you know, inch by inch, it's a cinch. You know, yard by yard, it's hard, but inch by inch, it's a cinch.
Right.
And but no one wants to hear that. I mean, you show up and you haven't done anything in 30 years, and you want a 6-week program. Well, you know, how about those 30 years? You know,
and 6 weeks is
much of that.
Yeah, so we have to do is get them to, you know, for the first month, you drink 2 glasses of water a day. And then you floss a tooth for a couple of weeks until you get the habit of flossing every tooth. And then it's little teeny habits, but in one of the people I worked with, we started with 2 glasses of water a month. And in the year, he had lost 100 pounds. And so it's because if you do the little things first and you get the power and the energy to make the big changes, it tends to happen. But at the same time, see, I also agree with Tony Robbins about instant change. The problem is there has to be real pain for someone to have instant change.
Yeah, what's the driving force?
And too many people you work with just don't have that pain. They don't, I mean, you know, they have a warm house, they have a comfortable bed, they've got 600 stations, they got fantasy football, they've got, you know, it's hot dog night, it's wings night, it's this night, it's that night. And so to get them to walk away from all that, it's really difficult. So that's why I like for most people, it's going to be what we call pound the pavement, walk the walk. It's the tiny steps that add up to a long, you know, a long journey. But man, it's a hard thing to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really hard to sell. You work with a high school boy and, the club coach is promising mom and dad a full ride scholarship if they pay $1,200 a month to join this little club. And I'm over here saying, nah, my coaching's free, but, you know, if you stick with me for 5 years, you know, all your dreams come true. I don't sell sexy very well, you know. So your high school football coach doesn't sell sexy very well either, but they, for whatever reason, people will still believe the football coach, but the rest of us, they don't. You know, I'm going to beat you to death for 4 years, and I might let you play your senior year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the truth, though. That's really what most of us do in this business. I'm going to beat you to death for a couple months, and then all your dreams come true, you know?
Yeah, with no real rationale, or it's just kind of paying the bills for a lot of people that, you know, I can convince, I can package something, make it look really sexy, like you're saying, and people are going to think it's really cool and it's effective, but, you know, it's, are the basics there or what they really need in that program?
Right. the best way to do it is through community. I think Mark Fisher does a great job with it. Mark Fisher Fitness in New York. He's got his program called Snatched in 6 Weeks. But what I think really makes it work is the communal aspect of it. And then, of course, here at our gym, we have, you know, our intentional community every day at 9:30. People just show up and train. It's free, and it motivates me. It motivates other people. We learn from each other. So
yeah,
it's interesting because if I can convince the person to show up a few times, but also make it communal, then I think it works.
And, right.
And when you do both of those, magic happens, you know. But it's you went to the single toughest question first, which, you know, I guess I appreciate. But that is, I mean, that's
well,
because
everything
part.
Else
I mean,
is the it, basics. Everything else is the, you know, the stuff you talked about to begin with. It's do you squat?
Yeah.
Do you hinge? Do you carry? Do you drink water? And do you sleep?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
That's the easy stuff.
And if
to
we,
do.
And that you're right, and then you we jumped immediately to the, you know, the single hardest thing, which I feel pretty comfortable about, especially when I can get people to understand. If I can get people to own the community, then they wake up one day and they're going, oh my God, all my dreams, you know, my goals happened. But if it's just purely when you were to beat with a stick until I make you do what you want. That's exhausting for me, and it doesn't always work.
Yeah.
But it's a, you know, you, but it's kind of funny how you, the first, we just went from A to Z on the questions, you know.
sometimes that's the best way to get there, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Dive right in. So as far as, you know, and I kind of reconnected with you or tried to get hold of you just to talk about, I'm teaching a class on assessment of health and function for human physiology majors. And, you know, this is a big area where I think, you know, kind of maybe connects the dots between A and Z. So what are some assessments that you think are valuable to understanding, you know, where your client is at currently, and then maybe what those little steps are going to be along the way, or if there's somebody that maybe should just try, you know, that drastic change right away?
Sure. So, in other words, give you my last three books. Okay, great.
yeah.
We have what's called the 1-2-3-4 assessment. And one is very simple. Can you stand on 1 foot for 10 seconds? And if you can't, then I send you to a medical doctor because we want to know what's going on. Do you have a hip issue? Do you have MS? Do you have cancer? I mean, cause, and that's funny because those are some of the problems we've encountered over the years. I've expanded that a little bit now, that if someone can easily stand on 1 foot for 10 seconds, now if you're standing on your left foot, I ask you to touch your right hand to your left foot.
Okay.
And then we do the other way. And that's just, I learned that from Taylor Lewis. And that's just to see, you know, how that, you get a chance to look at balance. Two measurements. If you weigh over 300 pounds, then I send you to an eye doctor, a dentist, and a medical doctor before I'll work with you. And that's statistical reasons. If you weigh over 300, all the statistics change. The second measurement is your waistline. And at our, we believe this, if your waistline is over half your height, then you're what we call a 3. You're a body composition client. So that's it. I mean, I don't care what you said with your mouth about your goal. You know, if your waistline is over, I hope I'm explaining that right. So if you're 72 inches tall, you need a 36-inch waistline or smaller.
Right.
If it's 36, 37, 38, 39, 40, 41, 42, then you're a body composition client, no matter what you say. Okay, so that's 1 and 2. 3 are 3 questions. The first question's an odd one, but it's interesting. How many pillows do you need to sleep comfortably at night? If it's more than one, you're a mobility client. And people will fight you on this one. I mean, people will get angry. No, I need I sleep with three, but I don't really need the extra two. And then, of course, you put them on an FMS screen, and they score a six with nothing but asymmetries. And it's like, well, yeah, you have mobility issues.
Yeah.
No, I don't. I do yoga. But you do. And the next two questions are pretty simple. Do you eat colorful vegetables every day? Yes or no? And the third question is, do you exercise half an hour a day? Yes or no? We know from the research that if you eat colorful vegetables every day and exercise half an hour every day, there's no need to come see me. But what we're trying to do there is discern what's coming out of your client's mouth. Most people, when they talk to a coach, a priest, a rabbi, a minister, always tell the coach, priest, rabbi, or minister what they think the coach, priest, rabbi, or minister wants to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they say, yes, I eat vegetables every day and I love them, yes, absolutely, you exercise half an hour a day, and they weigh 370 pounds, you can kind of get a sense that maybe there is a disconnect between what their mouth is saying and what they're actually doing. And that'll help you down the line. So 1, 2, 3, and 4 is the four physical tests we do, but really it's usually just one. Can you hold a plank for 2 minutes? If you can't, then you are a strength client. So if you fail the measurement test, you sleep with more than one pillow, pardon me, and you can't hold a plank, we consider you a 7. And a 7 means anything we do is going to help you. If you fail the plank, we're done. But if you pass the plank, then we measure standing long jump, if appropriate, and we expect you to be able to at least standing long jump your height. If it's less than that, then we probably have mobility issues, gluteal amnesia issues, God only knows what. And we do a farmer walk test, and we expect to be able to carry your body weight for 100 yards. And we just made that up. But and then the fourth test is the Brazilian get up test, and we expect you have a score of 8 and above. And if you don't know what that is, I have it on my website. 3 longevity tests. It's a very interesting test that actually predicts the chances of you surviving the next 20 years. Even with all my injuries, I'm still an 8, which makes me pretty happy. But I also do Turkish get-ups every single day. So maybe I'm tricking the test.
There might be some correlation.
That's the one. Pardon me?
There might be some correlation between the two, I would say.
Yeah. So that's the 1, 2, 3, 4 assessment. From there, there's 8 groups you can be in. 1 is pure mobility client. 2 is mobility and body comp. 3 is body composition. 4 is body composition and strength. 5 is pure strength client. 6 is a good place to be. 6 is how I train off-season athletes. It's mobility and strength training. And then 7 has issues in everything. And then a person who passed all the tests, we train as a 6, mobility and strength. So that then gives us an insight to how I'm going to train the person. If the bulk of the people in the United States are in the 3 triad, so 3s need some kind of nutritional intervention, and we try to go positive first. So more vegetables, more water, more lean protein. So that's how we try to start. And then we try to get rid of cardboard carbs. Those are carbohydrates in a bag or a box. And then we try to get rid of Frankenstein fats. That's any kind of fat made in a laboratory. So avocados are fine. Butter is fine. Anything that you can figure out, that's one step for nature, is fine. So, and then on the exercise side, we're just looking for inefficient exercise and something that makes you work really hard, but you can't ever get good at. That'd be kettlebell swings, concept 2 rower, aerodyne, heavy hands is a great example. If you're a shitty swimmer, if you're not a good swimmer, swim would be fine. If you're a lousy bicycle rider, bicycle riding's fine. But if, you know, if you're an Olympic, former Olympic swimmer, swimming's not going to help you for fat loss.
Yeah.
So that's our assessment. Okay.
That's great. You said you made up your farmer walk carry. What do you see with that usually with people, you know, not being able to carry? What is it? Was their body weight for 100 yards?
Yeah, but okay. Well, let me give you the numbers. So this is when we use a trap bar. So if you're 135 and below, use 135. 136 to 165, use 165. 166 to 185, 185. 186 to 205, and then anybody over 205, 206 and above uses 225 only. And the idea is this: if you can't pick up and carry your own body weight about 100 yards, then we assume you got work capacity issues. And the funny thing is, almost universally, we're right.
Yeah.
After about 2 or 3 weeks of intelligent training, most people nail that test. With the standing long jump test, jumping your own height, honestly, sometimes 5 minutes of flexibility work and they can get it. So the standing long jump could be gluteal amnesia or mobility issues or both, which is not uncommon for an office worker.
Yeah,
who sits in a chair all day. Yeah. So they sit in a chair all day and they lose their butt and they lose their mobility.
So here, I want to ask you a little bit more about the gluteal amnesia thing. What is one of the things that you guys do to correct that? Because I think that's a very underdiagnosed problem. Right. I see that in so many people, and it's one of those things that I think a lot of people don't know good ways to go about correcting it. So what have you guys found to be the most successful way to address that issue?
See, I think the easiest is just it's called the glute bridge, the hip thrust, or the supine bridge, or the pelvic tilt. You lay in your back, you put the back of your hands on the ground, and then you squeeze your butt cheeks and lift your hips up. Once we get you there, then we do a couple of things. So are you all with me what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
You understand? Okay. So putting a mini band around the knees and have the person pull their knees apart, that's a good next step, because by pulling the knees apart with the mini band around the knees, that's, for whatever reason, makes the glutes wake up more. And then the most interesting thing is put the hands at zenith. So I'm just on my shoulders now. The only thing touching the ground are my shoulders and my 2 feet. Put my hands at zenith, and then I'm going to put okay, you're doing it, okay. So I'm going to put my hands, and your job is to pull your hands to your knees. If you can follow it.
Oh, yeah.
Say.
Yeah.
Okay. So your hands are at zenith, and then I'm isometrically holding your hands in that position. And so what we're trying to do is make your ab wall work hard now.
Yeah.
It's interesting. When you teach a kettlebell swing correctly, pulling the bell down, so you throw the bell forward and then you catch it and throw it down, the harder you make the ab wall work, the more you'll make your glutes work. So
interesting.
Doing the hip thrust, putting the mini band on the outside of the knees and pulling them out, and then doing that little isometric ab trick, that shows, it'd be funny because you'll watch people just suddenly bail out of it. And then here's a rule for you that might help you. After I train you, if the next day your hamstrings hurt, we're doing everything right. If your lower back hurts, then you're not a very good client. Okay?
I like that.
Because if your hamstrings hurt, we're working your glutes. If your lower back hurts, then you're not doing it right. You got that? So that's just a little, I mean, it's not perfect, but
yeah.
When someone complains about their lower back, then I instantly regress them all the way back. Interesting thing, today at the workout, my lower back started hurting, and I said to myself, what the hell are you doing wrong? And it was funny because I wasn't focused correctly on my swings. I was just it was funny to think that, you know, because I'm supposed to know what I'm doing.
Yeah, you've got.
And, yeah, I mean, I've got all those letters on my name and all that stuff. So I'm supposed to. And here, right in the middle of the workout, all of a sudden my lower back barked at me. And it's like, okay, all right, stop. Think it through. It's technical. It's, you know, it's just funny how, you know, I mean, this is my 50th year of lifting weights, and I still make rookie mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's so great for people to hear and realize that, oh, man, I should maybe pay attention to what I'm doing and not the, you know, expert. Oh, I've been through a 6-week program. I'm now an expert at, you know, whatever the lift you might have done.
Yeah. Oh, and I could have pushed through on that set and finished.
Yeah.
And I would have 30 years ago, I'd have done that. Now I stop, realign, rethink, bring myself back around. It's not a contest. It's, you know, that's what I see with the glutei amnesia issue. Okay.
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, that's just part of it. I mean, there's 1,000 other things, but well, I'm sure there is. I don't know of them, but you know, so those are the big ones. Those are the big ones for me.
Good. I kind of want to go back to something you just said, finished off with saying it's not a competition. I think that's kind of the, you know, I think one thing you touched on earlier was that community is so great for people, right. You know, making life change, which is, you know, I feel like the trend in the fitness industry right now is building fitness around community, which I think is really great. But I think on the other end of that, they do see it as competition every day. And that if they put their kettlebell down, they're going to, you know, lose, quote unquote, to the person that's right next to them. How do you respond, or how do in your gym that you train at your home in your garage gym, is that right, or is it kind of a bigger
you
get people that are, you know, start getting a little bit more competitive and losing sight of what the purpose behind what they're doing is?
Well, yeah, but it was nice, and at least where I train, we have a guy with a Super Bowl ring. We've had guys train who play Major League Baseball, a couple of guys. In fact, one guy was playing just a few weeks ago still. We have guys who have multiple Purple Hearts and multiple medals from their service. We have, you know, people who've written, you know, kind of important books. So if you want to compete in my gym, I don't know how to say it any nicer, but no matter what you do, it's not going to come off well. I mean, if you try to win the burpee contest, someone's going to stand over and go, you know, that's not an Olympic sport. You know, it doesn't, you know what I'm saying? There is no, I was at an Olympic lifting meet not long ago. And this, you know, this guy was obviously had a little extra help, and you know, he was acting like he had just was the greatest lifter the world ever saw. And my coach Dave Turner reminded me that he was lifting weights that I used to warm up with when I was 20 years old, and we're just kind of laughing about it because he was acting like,
yeah.
No, my point is that when you have people who've been there, done that, you don't compete as much. But if you think that a 275 pound clean and jerk is something to, you know, start acting like a total idiot, then we need to have a, and it's a great lift and God bless you for doing it. But that's the thing that helps us the most.
Yeah.
You know, we have a mom who comes in to train with us, who brings her baby with, and she has this little portable crib that he stays in. And so her training partner has a Super Bowl ring. Okay, you learn to rein it in a little bit when you see that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, that's,
you know,
cool.
She's concerned about baby weight. And he's concerned about concussions. You know, it's kind of fun to, you know, have that conversation during a workout. And I'm not, you know, it's not being macho or anything. It's just, when you get quality people around you and great stories, you don't have to worry about it as much.
Yeah.
You know?
I think, too, that perspective helps keep people and the right mindset of what's really important too.
And what is important? And that's, you just nailed it. What's important? I mean, you know, one of my big goals is to dance at my granddaughter Josie's wedding. You know, she's 1 year old. I'm 58. I'm the age my mother was when she died. I'm sneaking up on the age my father was when he died. And we don't live long in my family. So for me, what's important? Dance at my granddaughter's wedding. Yeah. What's important? You know, making a difference in this planet. I mean, that's important to me. So you're absolutely right. You know, I don't want to hear about your six pack. I don't, you know, I mean, I go online and I see, you know, when you talk, you know, these people are talking about their six packs and stuff. And it's like, God bless you for doing it. But
who cares?
If you're living in your mom's basement and there's nothing wrong with that, and you have a six pack, you know, I mean, it's time to move on sometimes, you know?
Yeah. Priorities should possibly shift a little bit and get that.
I think that's important. Yes.
Yeah.
I think that might be the quote of the day. If you have a six pack and live in your parents' basement.
Yeah. One of the quotes I love from you a lot is, you know, always bring things back to whether you call it perspective or whether you call it the goal or, you know, understanding what your goals are. And, you know, is your goal to have a six pack? Okay, great. You know, what are you going to do to get there? But is that your long-term goal? And keeping the goal the goal.
Well, a lot of people miss the point behind what you just said. I've got to tell you, I mean, and I'm, you know, here's the thing. In your little comment thread, someone's going to say, oh, Dan John's so full of himself. It always happens, and it pisses me off because I try to be honest when I talk on podcasts. But here's the thing I've learned in my life. Is that you can get your goals and be an absolute miserable failure. To me, I always try to talk to my athletes and everybody else about what I call success. And I think I was lucky because as a track and field athlete, you know, all my education cost $10. I've been all over the world. I've got lots of degrees, but it's because I threw the discus far, okay? But the thing is this. My goal of throwing the discus far allowed me to be successful because every thrower knows it's the academics that's going to be long-term. There's no, I mean,
you mean your wealth hasn't come from throwing the discus?
Directly? No, not at all. No, but it's funny you say that because I have actually made money as an athlete and I probably make more writing a single article now. You follow?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, what makes you successful and achieving a goal aren't always the same thing. So, and I push that on my athletes a lot, defining success as much as achieving a goal. And it's funny because that maxim that I live by, the goal is to keep the goal of the goal, is also the same exact truth for being a success. You know, you told me you wanted blah, blah, blah. And, you know, if you want to be a good discus thrower, you're not going to, or a Highland Game athlete, and you're worried about your six-pack, you're too stupid to be throwing the caber, you know, because you can't have both of them. When, you know, I've got my body weight down to 209 for weightlifting meets. That's 94 kilos. I struggled in Highland Games for 2 years after that.
Yeah.
Because I didn't, you're throwing a 56 pound weight for distance. You got to have some fat around that belly to counter that thing. I'm not saying you need all, please, here's what's going to happen. Someone say, so Dan John says I need to get as fat as I possibly can to be good.
The fatter the better.
So, So if you follow my point, is that sometimes achieving a goal can actually take you away from being successful.
Yeah.
And that's where I try to really preach to my athletes about, you know, when you stand back, you know, you don't want to be still fighting for that bachelor's degree. There's a school here in Utah. My mother-in-law is a fan of them. It's called BYU, which keeps talking about they have this quarterback who's a true freshman. He's 23 years old, and he's a freshman. When I was 23, I had a master's degree, and I was teaching in high school. And my point is, God bless him. I mean, you know, he's got his goal playing quarterback. But sometimes success and achieving a goal aren't necessarily the same thing, if you follow that.
Yeah,
and
no,
that's
a great
thing I try to circle my athletes around, yeah.
That's a really great point. So you've had a lot of experience, you know, coaching at different various levels. But, I mean, the job that you as a strength coach that you had, aside from working with individuals, was at a high school, correct?
Right. No, I've had actually strength coach jobs at two universities, two high schools.
Okay.
Yeah, it's funny how people. Yeah, but what happened? The reason most people know about my high school career is because my daughters went to the school, and my older daughter Kelly asked me to take the job, and so most people of the internet era would know that part of my career.
Okay.
But I've done a whole bunch of other stuff before that, and after that, a million more things. But can you see how that can happen?
Oh yeah.
You know, I'm sure there's some poor Shakespearean actor out there somewhere who's done everything, was on Hamlet, you know, for 13 years. The third Klingon or something. I feel that way about being a high school strength coach. That was my Star Trek third Klingon moment, you know.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry I brought it up. Yeah. I hope it didn't dig
too
deep.
Oh, no, it's not a problem. It's not a problem at all. But it is funny how that will happen. I literally did it as a favor to my daughters because the track coach situation was, they both really loved track and field. And then it was a hard change in my career for me because I was an administrator. And then I had to go back and take, which is not a job that is kind of not as one's the high school strength coach's opinion isn't as important as other positions in the community. I'll just say that nicely. Yes.
I think people can relate to that.
Yeah.
So what's been one of the things over, you know, as your career has, you know, obviously evolved quite a bit. What's been, you know, the one thing that you have found that you've been able to come back to and be successful? Like, kind of what's the one underlying principle that you've tried to adhere to?
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, I mean, when I first coached, I thought the answer to all things were the Olympic lifts. And the funny thing is, that still is the best answer. If all you did was snatch, clean and jerk, and farmer walk, you'd be fine. Here's what I've learned, though, is most people aren't physically prepared to do those full range motions. And that's got me to learn, and this is the answer to the question, is that movement is primary. So if the snatch is a hinge into a squat, but if you can't hinge, you can't snatch. If you can't squat, you can't snatch. So we have to, I'm to the point now with so much, I mean, I'm talking about even college age kids, I have to teach them how to hinge and I have to teach them how to squat. I used to be able to teach kids to snatch and clean and jerk their freshman year, and that's all we did for 4 years or five, you know, with a redshirt year. But so for me, it's still that explosive hinge into the squat, and the load hits you, and all those wonderful things happen. The Olympic lifts are still the right answer. The problem is the question changed, you know, if you will.
Hmm.
So for me, the fundamental human movements are right. Push, pull, hinge, squat, load, and carry. That's where the money is. And if you can get it by just doing one or two movements, then you're way ahead of the game. If you have to use 10 movements, you're still fine. If you have to spend 2 years getting a person to be able to stretch their hamstrings, you might not have an elite athlete.
Yeah. So your goal, like, with regardless of the person that you're working for, is basically to get them to the point where that they could snatch and clean and jerk when you're speaking of strength.
Actually, I never thought of it. Okay, the way you phrased that made me feel kind of weird. But yeah, actually, I guess that's true. I guess the goal is to get them to snatch and clean and jerk. I guess I didn't think of it that way, but
I mean, kind of breaking it down. Obviously, there's more to it than that. But I mean,
but no, I appreciate you taking a 50-year career and, you know, summarizing it. But you're right. I think so in a way. Yeah, in a way. That's interesting you said that, but in a sense, you're right. If I can get you to a place where you can do the Olympic squat snatch and the Olympic squat clean and jerk, for most goals and for most things, my job is over. I always try to find these minimum levels for success, the standards. I always try to find these minimums. And so I let the athlete know that if you're at this number here, then your problem is not a weight room problem. Your problem is a technical problem. Your problem is a tactical strategic problem. Your problem is a reaction time problem. Maybe you're not tall enough problem. And so, like, well, we know, I say these numbers all the time, but in discus throwing, it's a 250 snatch, 300 clean, 400 bench, 450 back squat. If you have those numbers and you're not an elite thrower, then your problem is technical.
Yeah.
Or maybe tactical. It's not in the weight room. And it bothers people to hear that. It really does. It's like, well, I'll just get stronger. Well, no. Getting stronger is easy. Learning how to throw under pressure is tough. You know, learning how to make a free throw when it's a one-on-one shot and you're down by 1 point, that's a tough free throw. That's what you need to work on, not your bench press.
Yeah, and then, you know, I think this is so great to hear, just because it seems like, you know, Brad, I'm sure, can attest to this also. This is much of the content that we try to, you know, portray to our audience, is, you know, that getting things back to the basics and always circling back to what's the goal. So you're talking about, you know, if you're strong enough, that's great. What's the goal then? You know, it's not to get stronger, then it's to get better at that goal.
Right.
It's to get better at what you're trying to get better at. And so always just kind of recircling to that, back to basics. Understand, you know, the fundamentals of what you're trying to accomplish.
Right. You know, so we're walking on the same path. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. I guess my last question that I've got for you is, you know, you've obviously done a ton of stuff. You have a ton of different experiences. And I believe one of your degrees that you have is in religious studies, and you teach religious studies on that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, like, we always try to relate, you know, what training has meant to life and how life affects our training, or, you know, and it's so, you know, there's so much reciprocal response between all the different areas of life. How has, you know, your background in religious studies affected your training, and maybe vice versa?
Well, that's a good question. Here's the thing about theology and philosophy. Okay, and many of your audience may have heard me say this before, but it's important. Philosophy and theology are based on geometry. And geometry begins with something called givens. And so in theology, if you believe in one God and something terrible happens to a good person, we have a whole field of study called theodicy that deals with that. If you believe in multiple gods and something happens to a person you care for, it's really easy, because that one God who doesn't like you got that person. You got that?
Yeah.
But see, I believe in givens as a coach too. And your givens are your DNA, your genetics, and your geography, where you live. Those are the two big ones. I grew up in South San Francisco when discus throwing was really a big deal. I mean, it was as important as the track meet as anything. So the fact that I became a discus thrower at the time I did isn't surprising. Now, my genetics to be a discus thrower, I'm a fast twitch monster, but I'm not tall enough. I'm probably 3 or 4 or 5 inches too short to be a great discus thrower. But being fast twitch and having the right geography allowed me to go be in a place where I could win the state championship, get a full ride scholarship, and good things happened. So for me, the religious studies and theology has informed me as a coach because it allows me to go back to this thing called the givens and to prove. The givens are your DNA and your geography, your height, your eye color, okay,
right.
All that stuff. And then when you tell me you want to do this goal, I sit back and I say, okay, you want to play in the NBA and you're a white kid from Utah who's 6 foot. And you want to play in the NBA. Can you just circle all the NBA guys who are 6 foot tall from Utah? Just make a circle. We'll do a Venn diagram. What you'll notice is that there's no one in your Venn diagram. There's this blank. So, you know, I mean, it's great you have this goal, but you'll never be successful. You see how I did that? See where I went there? You won't be successful having this goal. Because you don't, the toolkit's not there. The givens aren't there. You got that?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the number of Utahns I can think of who've played in the NBA under 7'6" is zero. So that'll give you an idea of what you need to be. If you want to be a Utah and play in the NBA, it's a pretty good idea to be 7'6" or 7'7". Okay?
All right.
So that informs, so my theology background really informs my method of coaching, okay? Now, my method of coaching also informs my religious study stuff. I would like to say in my life, I have seen the hand of God several times, okay? I will cry if I tell you the stories, so I won't. But three of them involve my daughter, Lindsay. She shouldn't have lived. She shouldn't have survived. That's the second story. And when she won the state championship her senior year as a shot putter, she was the smallest girl in the field and probably the least athletic. God bless her, but I love her. But that's the truth.
Yeah.
And to watch how someone who shouldn't have survived her birth, someone who should have drowned in a lake one day, and God only knows, I reached into the water and grabbed her. It was,
wow.
Oh my God, I don't even know. I just know it was you talk about a baptism moment. It was the opposite. She was underwater. We had lost her. And I reached in, and there she was in my hand. And it was over 30 seconds. She was under for 30 seconds. And so, okay. And then a few years later, she was state champ in the shot. And all I know is this, is that those stories, watching Devin Callis win the state championship, watching Eric Lindquist win the state championship, watching all these people who had no right to be where they were, and winning this thing because, in all those cases, all these odd little cliques, all these odd little, these little tiny encounters with the universe. They had to be in the right place at the right time. They had to be here. The reason Eric won the state championship, it's because my other discus thrower, showing him a drill, broke his ankle. and we took Eric to the side and said, okay, He broke his ankle showing this. She better do this thing right. And God bless him, he didn't pull it off. So what it's taught me is that you walk out a door and you go to your left, you walk out your door and you go to your right, and your whole life can change. And yeah. Sometimes, like in my case, I'm at a weightlifting meet at the Sports Palace, and I stand up and I literally bump into a guy named Dick Knottmeyer, and we start to talk, and I find out he's only a 3 or 4 mile away from me, and he charges 25 cents a week to work out at his gym. So for the rest of my career, Dick Knottmeyer, for 25 cents a week, coached me 5 days a week for 3 hours a day in the Olympic lifts.
For bumping into him. Wow.
And don't tell me that that's not one of the most important moments of my life. Meeting my wife, Tiffany, she was getting set up with my assistant coach. He brought me along as a wingman. Every important moment of my life is an event that I could have said no to just as easily as yes to.
Yeah.
And what I've discovered and what I'm trying to say to you is this, is that learning to say yes is what makes a difference in one's life.
Yeah. 'Cause you never know what's on the other side of the door that you're going to open, you know, until you open it.
Never. You're bumping to Dick Knottmeyer, you're bumping to Tiffany. You know, that's what happens.
Yeah. That's crazy. That's great stories.
Man, well, this has been awesome, Dan. It's been so great. You know, I've followed your work for years, and it's awesome to get you on the phone. And, you know, you bringing up the philosophy is really interesting. I have a really deep love for philosophy, and did a lot of work in my graduate work on philosophy. So sometime I'll have to just call you again and we can just talk shop. But this has been awesome.
I'm a Wittgensteinian, so it won't take long.
Awesome. This has been fantastic, Dan. We really appreciate it. Where can our listeners find out more about you, and where can they follow up with you?
Sure. danjohn.net. And if your listeners have a question, email me at dan@danjohn.net, and that'll go straight to me, okay?
Perfect. Awesome. All right, well, you know, thanks so much. This has been awesome, and I'm looking forward to chatting with you again sometime.
Hey, whenever you guys want, okay?
All right, sounds good.
I enjoy doing this.
Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks,
Dan. Best to you both, okay?
Thank you.
Hey, good night.
Good night.
Got it.
I hope that God decides to talk through them. If the people decide to walk with them, regardless of pitchfork, cosigns, I've jumped. Make sure the sound man doesn't cock block the drums. Let the snare knock the air right out of your lungs. And those words be the oxygen. Just breathe.